know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off a scene.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I am your host, Robert. I'm here with Tyler. We haven't spoken, have we? No, we haven't spoken.
No,
we've only barely texted. Yes.
To be honest.
Yes, so this will be raw and real, and this will be our, I'm calling this a therapy session. We did this last year. We're going to try to be as real as possible as to how we feel. It is Thursday night. I didn't realize at all we'd be doing this during, when I sent that last night that I was too tired to do it, and when I was falling asleep at 8:30 p.m. or whatever. I had no idea that we'd be doing this during the game we should be
our
playing.
Slot, yeah. Yes. I just finished watching the Houston Arizona halftime, and I was thinking this. Actually, I thought it when you texted last night, wanted to push to tonight. I was like, we're going to be talking right during our game slot.
Yep. So here we are. Like, we should be playing right now. I don't even know the score. I don't even care. I don't even know who. I think I want Arizona to win. I keep going back and forth. I think I want Arizona to win handily just so I can have some kind of, well, we wouldn't have made it anyway or something. There's that part who wants the 2000 comp to carry all the way through, that Houston is just Florida and we lost in the 4-5 game and then Houston will go all the way to the title game. And we can rest on, well, we should have gone further, but we did lose a team that made the title game. So well, I honestly don't know who I want to win. I won't.
I won't give you any spoiler. I'll just say that it's not going to be a blowout either way. Houston is tough, and they came to play tonight. I'll say that. They just defend the hell out of the ball, and they get every offensive rebound. It's crazy.
I hate everything. I hate everything. I want. I didn't check the scores for the first games until well after they'd, like, the anxiety in my body when I'm checking scores and it doesn't refresh right away and I'm just waiting to make sure Michigan lost. Like,
invested in that game. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of basketball since we lost. There hasn't been much since Sunday, but
right.
I was invested in that game, so happy to see.
At least we have that.
Yeah,
I don't. It doesn't bother me as much for some reason what Purdue does. I needed Michigan to lose this game.
Yeah,
another Michigan Elite Eight would have just been unbearable.
Yep. Agreed.
But whatever. Let's just start with Sunday. We haven't really talked. So your feelings immediately after, like, what? Where were you at?
Well, I mean, I'm probably going to come at this with a little bit different energy than you, because of course I was disappointed by the loss. But my initial reaction was nowhere near the devastation and the what the hell just happened reaction that I had last year after the Loyola game, because as much as I wanted to get on the belief bandwagon, when I was making that, I had the scout post for Houston. I'm like, good Lord, everything that they do well matches up against what we do poorly.
Yeah.
And I wasn't confident going into that game. And from a basketball standpoint, because it played out in my head kind of like I thought it would, that eventually our weaknesses caught up to us. At the end of the day, I thought a better basketball team beat us, and as opposed to last year when I don't think that was the case. And so I obviously immediately, I think I had tweeted that the finality is always just crazy. I mean, I'm just one in, it's 40-40. And then 10 minutes later, I'm out raking leaves for no reason, Yeah. So it's that, but my reflection wasn't, on the season, on the legacy of the players that were on the floor is nowhere near the devastation that I felt last year. And that's only kind of grown since then. I've had a much bigger sense of appreciation and appreciate of appreciation and celebration for these guys and what they've accomplished than I am disappointed in the loss. I wasn't able to find that level of despair that I found last year.
Well, good, because you'll balance me out here.
I mean, it's that cliche, you know. Of course, I hate to bring it up, but I'm in that. I found myself this week of celebrating that it happened more than I am sad that it ended.
Mm-hmm. I have found myself like I'm still okay. Let's go to late January, early February. Just pick a moment. You're flipping through Twitter. You see some Jeff Goodman tweet saying nobody wants to play Illinois in March. Or, you know, like all the stuff we saw during the Purdue game. You know, it's an 11 a.m. game and pretty much the whole country's watching, and you check those national tweets and it's like, this is high quality basketball. This could be a Final Four matchup. You know, the Arizona game, it was the same stuff. Like, you know, it's this feature game and you have national writers, not just Goodman, we're talking like 10 national writers saying, wow, Arizona, Illinois, like this is what we've been looking for in college basketball. You know, give me these non-conference matchups where it is high-end basketball. And so the entire year, even as we struggled, even with injuries, even with everything else, I clung to that hole. Like, this is a team built for March, average age 23.1. You know, I was all in on what the tournament could be. So as it fell away in the second round again, I haven't gotten up off that mat because I still... You know, when I just can't let go of, there were just too many national people. I mean, who had Matt Norlander had us in the Final Four this year? Like he 1 week ago, right now, he released his bracket and said, yeah, I think that, you know, I was buying in. It's a team built for March. We have a first team All American. We're going to take the lesson of last year. I was completely bought in on all those things, so much that I started my stupid Believe campaign, and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to put it out there because this is not a team. They're not going to go home like last year. It's just not going to happen. So to grit my teeth and put it out there and know, we, you know, and 4 minutes left and we're down by 9 and I'm still saying we're about to play the best 360 seconds of our basketball lives, and then it's over. It's Thursday night, and I still haven't recovered. There's no chance I will watch one more minute of college basketball this year. There, I won't watch the title game. I am more disgusted and don't want it on my TV than any other time. I will not watch a second this weekend, and I will not watch the Final Four. I almost all usually watch the title game. There's 0.0% chance I watch the title game. I'm just in this total. I don't want the sport to exist. That's where I'm at. I'm just being honest. I can't get out of it.
And I knew that you were there, and I almost felt bad knowing that we were going to have this kind of different
it's good.
Place, because I was that was last year me. I was done. I didn't watch 1 minute, not one, after we lost Loyola. That team didn't validate itself. But you talked about the national media, and I know Matt Norlander and a couple of people had put us in the Final Four. But you know, I keep going back to your post of that team over there, and to me, that team over there that they're talking about was the team in January. And I was with that group in January. You know, who are the 10 teams? I listened to whatever the Norlander's podcast is. And I think him and Gary Parrish went through the 10 teams that they thought could win a national title out of the top 20.
Yeah.
And Illinois was one of them. I was right with them.
Yep.
But the mojo of this team has just... It just kind of kept showing cracks in the arm, and we had a terrible second half of Purdue, struggled against Northwestern twice. Yeah, we had good offensive performances against Michigan and Michigan State, Yes, I mean, the Iowa game, you know, that was a little bit of luck to win that. But everything that, that we had built this team around, like a team built for March, you have Kofi, you're going to surround him with shooters and make them make a defense pay for whatever they pick. If they double-team Kofi, then he's going to pass the ball out and we're going to knock down three. So if they don't double-team Kofi, Kofi's going to get 35 and 10 or whatever he did against Wisconsin. But the shooting never really recovered through February and March. Kofi became a willing passer. And I think the best way to kind of differentiate you and me right now is that I'm coming at this from a basketball sense and you're coming at it still from that emotional sense. And I just didn't have that confidence going in because, again, the shooting wasn't there. We'd lost Jake, which you know, clearly he wasn't right. Bella was playing better, but he was still such a wild card. So we had nobody to kind of get downhill to get to the basket. Trent was in a funk. Demonte hasn't been willing to shoot the ball since really all year. Plummer's up and down. And as willing a passer as Kofi was, he never really became a good passer. He was certainly willing, but he wasn't great at finding the open guy. And we became kind of predictable. And really the game that solidified it was that Penn State game when they absolutely laid a blueprint down on how to beat us. You know, leave Demonte open and double with whoever his man is and let the chips fall where they may. And that's just what we saw Houston do is double from the non-shooters. And we threw a little curveball at him when Goody came in and RJ came in and played really well, but that wasn't sustainable. And for as long as it was, I mean, you only get so much out of freshmen, and you saw eventually a better basketball team take over. And that's why I was okay with it. And to kind of put a bow on that, and I was down on Sunday, but then I don't remember where I saw this, but someone, maybe it was Twitter, said, find me that what was your favorite moments of the last 3 years of the Io, Kofi, Trent, Demonte era? And it was all these, you know, everyone had their responses, all these memorable moments. And that really just put me in a better place. So, you know what? I'm celebrating these guys. They hung a banner. They fell a game short of where we, you know, or two or whatever, than what we really expected out of this team. But I am looking back at this team and these last 3 years with a lot of happiness. And that's why I'm not in as bad a place as I was last year.
I think why I'm maybe worse than last year is, and maybe this doesn't prove to the truth, but there's this finality to, I mean, I mentioned what I wrote today. At the Iowa game, Kofi, Demonte, Trent, Jake, and Plummer all walked across the court. Your entire starting five is standing out there with their jerseys behind glass. Sure, maybe we get lucky, Kofi returns, maybe Jake takes that extra, whatever. But there's also a chance the entire starting five is gone and we start over. And if we start over, maybe we get lucky in the portal or maybe something happens, but it's going to be a 17-14 team or something like that. That's what I see right now. Maybe it changes. Whatever, you know, I still had a lot of hope for this year. Last year, I thought it'd be a step back. And then when Kofi returned, it was like, wow, this is a thing. But for whatever reason, this senior night had some finality to it for me. And I just think next year is that kind of 17-14, maybe try to hang on to the bubble kind of year, which is fine. We've had 3 years where we ended up ranked in the final poll. We were, 21 in the final poll in 2020. We were number 2 in the final poll last year. We were number 19 in the final poll this year. That's a great, great, great run. We've been waiting for it forever. You're always going to have little rebuild years, and this looks like a rebuild year, and that's fine. I just have the feeling of, I think the best way to explain it is maybe, God, I'm going to use a pro sports analogy here. You know, the Rams went all in on this Super Bowl. you know, cap wise, everything else. This was just push every draft picks, everything else. They were making a run at it because they thought they could win a Super Bowl, and it worked. If it didn't work, and we've seen examples of how it doesn't work, those teams and their fan bases have this feeling of, oh man, we pushed all in. We traded away all of our draft picks. We were trying to get that one win, and it didn't happen. And now it's going to be a bit before we can recover from this stall here. And so that's where I'm at. Like, I'll get there in the off season, and I'll, you know, I'm already ready for the Ty Rogers 2025 Big Ten Player of the Year campaign, and you know, I have confidence we build it back up. It's just going to be a step back after you lose this many players, and because of that, I just have that feeling of the fan whose team pushed all the way in and didn't get there. I don't know how to escape. You know, during that era, they never got past the first weekend. It's just going to live on for a long, long time. And I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the word you said at the beginning of that is where I fall on this, is that last year, I absolutely knew that we were going to the Final Four. Knew it. And when it happened, and it didn't happen, and it happened in such stunning fashion, it just floored me. I couldn't get over it. This year, I hoped, and that was the word you used, hope. I hoped we'd make it to the Final Four, even though I wasn't really sold on it. So that's why I couldn't get there. Again, emotionally, I think. But I will say this, too. You know, we're talking about, what next year brings is in, I don't want to go too far down this road because the transfer portal changes everything, but the Big Ten is going to be terrible next year. Terrible. The Big Ten might lose its 10 best players.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there is, I mean, obviously if the conference is poor, then, you know, you may not be able to go 10-8 in the Big, or 10-10 in the Big Ten and get an NCAA tournament bid. But I think the downturn in the conference will afford an opportunity to have a surprisingly good year next year. And again, the transfer portal changes everything. So
yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like we're almost complete opposites on everything right now.
I know. I was going to bring a different energy, which is fine.
Yeah.
Cause we were in the same place, and it was just dark and awful, yeah, and grim last year.
But. Because it's so weird. Like let's look at my articles the night before the game. My article the night before Loyola was, please God, I think I picked this winning 63-61. I'm like, this is a horrible matchup. I've been scared to death of this game for a week. I don't want to play this game. I don't want anything to do with it. Like, I had zero confidence, scared to death. Then I turn around this year with a Houston team that's pretty good and said we were going to win by 14 or whatever. You know, like I was fully 100% confident. So, you know, because of that, I just didn't have the, you know, my reaction after the Loyola loss was, I've been scared of this exact thing happening since I saw the bracket. My reaction to Houston was disbelief. You know, I know the KenPom stats, I know everything else, but, you know, I just had this belief in, look, you think Trent Frazier's going to go out like that? You think Kofi, you think we're going to have an All-American and lose before the second weekend again? No, we're not. It's not going to happen. And I just clung to that probably without looking at the evidence that was out there that would have had me write another preview post saying I'm scared to death of this game, but I just wasn't. And so it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And so, you know, compared to my feeling in 2016, compared to my feeling in 2008, this is much, much, much more, this is the preferable option to how the college basketball fandom should go. And yes, I was there at Iowa, and yes, there's going to be a banner up there saying 2022, and, you know, there are good things. It's just tournament-wise, for whatever reason, I thought we were going to roll, and we didn't, and it's still slapping me in the face.
One thing I've also was able to do is tune out the Greg Waddells of the world. That's been a big thing. I found myself this season getting too far down that Twitter hole sometimes of chirping from other fan bases about this. But again, and not to be pick on Michigan or whatever, but there better not be an Illinois fan anywhere on this planet that would trade our season for Michigan's season because they won one game more in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine what Illini Nation fandom Twitter would have been like if we were based on going in this year, we finished 17-14 and going into the Big Ten, I mean, in terms of one of the last at large teams.
Yeah. I looked at their schedule and that home game they lost to Minnesota in December or whatever, that would have been the largest meltdown we would have ever had.
Right.
To lose to the team that's eventually going to be the 14th out of 14 teams in the Big Ten, to lose to them at home in December. Yes, it would have been epic meltdown kind of stuff.
And I think that's a discussion to be had about the Big Ten struggles and the style of play of the Big Ten compared to what we see in the tournament with teams that have athletes that can turn the corner and defend and rebound and that seems to be what plays in this tournament. It used to be like, oh, guard play matters, and, you know, whatever. But it's not guard play. It seems that teams with athletes at all positions, you know, that SEC, Big 12 kind of style seems to be what, for whatever reason, plays well in this tournament, at least in this era. And maybe that's what we're going to shift to. You know, who knows what, like Kofi said. But you know, maybe we see a different style of basketball, and maybe that's, you know, at least from Illinois next year, that at least starts to adjust to what we've seen in the tournament. Because obviously what we've done in the regular season hasn't translated for whatever reason.
Last
2 years anyway.
I don't know what it is you said there that made me think of this moment in the game, but this is where my brain went. At the timeout with 4 minutes to go, I barely have a voice at this point, and I was sitting with Carmen and Johnny, and I told them both, like, we're doing it. We were down nine, and I started an ILL chant, like, I'm doing this. We're going to, like, there's this story from Michigan State football game where we did this while we were down 31-10 in the fourth quarter, and then it was 31-17, and then it was 31-24, and we just kept starting more ILL chants, and somehow we, you know, biggest comeback in Illinois football history. So I tried to pull to that, and, you know, I had this believe thing, and because of all this, you know, I tried, and I wrote about this, like, you know, we're sitting in the Illinois section, and early, you know, first half and early in the second half, we got a lot of people that would join in on the ILL chants. On that one, like about a third of the section was still with us, and the rest were like, you know, a very silent, hey guys, it's over. And there is something very damaging in fandom when you push your belief beyond where people will even join you in a cheer, like the gulp that you make when the reality hits you stays with you for a long time. And that's why I think this is going to be a long process for me because, you know,
you didn't build in a hedge. This is the year you did not build in a hedge.
100%.
That's why it's such a, you know, I built in the hedge. I'm like, I didn't think it was a good matchup. I told you that.
Yep.
In text before the game,
yep.
That I'm still on the belief train, but I don't like the matchup. But that was my hedge, and yep. That's kind of where I'm at. And you went all. I mean, you absolutely went all in, and that's really yep. I think the fundamental.
And it's so point. Raw, like it is still so. You know, like I told people, I finally went to bed at like 3:30 in the hotel room, and I woke up at 4:30, and then was up for a while and then managed to go back to sleep once it started to get light out. Like, I have to be really, 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 like, emotionally damaged to finally fall asleep, exhausted and everything at 3:30 in the morning, and then my body an hour later is like, no, I can't even sleep. You know, it was just this complete, total devastation like I haven't felt in sports in a long, 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 long time. And I have no idea when I'll pull out of it. It's going to be months.
Is that why you didn't? That's why you didn't sleep well the last. We pushed it because you had said you were up till 4 in the morning. Whatever. Are you still dealing with the after effects of that? Or are you?
Last night was the reason I canceled. Is I finally just basically crashed. Like my body. Like we were sitting there watching something on TV, and you know, 8:15. I'm like, I honestly think I could go to bed right now and sleep for 12 hours. And so it was just one of those, it just reached the point where I couldn't anymore. And my body was like, all right, it is time to sleep for 10 hours. And I did. So I feel better today physically. But, you know, my anger toward not wanting to know scores and not wanting the NCAA tournament to exist and not wanting Michigan to win is, I can't remember this level of violent obsession. I don't even know how to say it. Like I can't remember this level of I want absolutely nothing to do with this.
Well, lean into it, because I was that way last year, and that's not unhealthy. It's not. Let it breathe. Let it live. I mean, if that's what gets you through, then that's all good. But I'm gonna at some point, either tonight or I'm going to ask you the same question that kind of brought me out of it. I'm going to ask you what your favorite plays of the or your favorite moments of the last three seasons are. I'm going to make you enjoy some of this.
You have to strap me to a gurney.
I know, right?
To do this. Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you said the hedge thing because I did. I left myself zero outs to the point where people in the Illinois section felt really sorry for me. Like, hey, man, you got to let it go. They're about to lose. It's just going to happen, you know?
Go ahead.
No, you keep going. I don't want to.
I was just going to say, when we were texting a little bit before the game, you're like, you know, we got the 40%, 50% game. We're going to get the 60. We're due a 60, 75% game,
yep,
against Houston, and we're doing 80, 90% game against Arizona or whatever. But honestly, and again, when's the last time we had it, even an 80% game from this team?
Yeah.
Maybe Michigan?
Yeah.
Maybe Michigan second half? Yeah. I mean, that's the only that yeah. It just didn't happen.
From the moment of Jake's injury,
yep,
we didn't see anything. Like, no, we didn't see a quarter of a half. Like, we didn't see an 8-minute stretch of, yes, this is the team. And, you know, I put it on, look, this team going to the tournament last year was world beaters. I remember thinking during the Rutgers Friday night game at the Big Ten tournament, like, I don't know who's going to beat this team. You know, they had struggled with Rutgers earlier in the season, and then we're up. Remember that one Io threw the pass ahead and we got a dunk on the break and Io was doing the jet thing, like flying across the, you know, with his arms out, and we went up by 28 against Rutgers. I just remember thinking during that game, like, this team is unstoppable, and they roll to the Big Ten title and roll through Drexel, and, you know, that's why, you know, whatever. We never had that feeling. So then I convinced myself, you know what? We were on this tremendous roll, and we got stopped. So this year it's going to be things were rough. It's just like Michigan last year. They were really stumbling going into the tournament. They had lost to Michigan State. They lost to us. They lost to Ohio State. And, you know, and then they righted the ship and went to the Elite Eight. So I was like, okay, that's what it's going to be for us. We've got the rough patch out of the way with Penn State, Iowa, Indiana. Here we go. It's time. We're going to put the pedal down. Here we go. And we score, what, 53 in one game and 54 in the other?
I mean, you shoot what, 30% from three. You know, that was our real firepower. It was a 3-point spacing the floor and letting it fly. And it never, other than small little stretches, it never rebounded to what we saw in December and January. And again, partially because teams started defending us better. They kind of figured that part out. And then again, Trent, you know, he's my favorite player of this, not the best player, my favorite. He was not good down the stretch. He just wasn't. Yeah. And maybe it was, you know, injury or fatigue or whatever, but he just, or
eye swollen shut.
Yeah, exactly. Who knows, but it's just, we never got a Trent heater that I kept thinking we were going to get. It just, I felt like it was due to happen. And just never happened. I thought that when he made that, the three to end the half against Houston, like, that's when I kind of, my, I got the eyebrow raised. I'm like, maybe that's going
to, we played that bad and somehow climb back to 4 points down.
Yeah.
Like, I was ready for a second half attack, and
Trent took an early three in the second half, and it missed by a mile. I'm like, nope.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get to your portion of the stuff. Let's get to you. I'm gonna lay down on the couch and put the pillow behind my head. You are in charge of my mental health at the moment, and you said you had questions, or you said it had an exercise you wanted to go through, so
yeah,
let's go through.
It's the same exercise that I saw. I need you, and it's going to be one for each of the last three seasons. I'm going to need you to give me your favorite moments. It can be a snapshot. It can be a stretch of play. It can be a whole game from 2020 season, 21 season, 22 season that will always stick in your mind in a positive way. For each of those three seasons.
First, I will go with 2021. And the moment is the Georgie oop at Minnesota when we went up like 37 points or whatever.
Io did the jet, yeah.
Yes, Io did the jumped with Georgie.
Yep.
That was the moment. The main thing I remember about that, that Minnesota game was the most bizarre of the COVID season, because most every other Big Ten arena, if they didn't have media sections somewhat close to the court, they would move the media down. Like Indiana took the media, put them in the student section there in the corner, and you know, others, excuse me, you know, obviously Illinois couldn't be courtside, you couldn't be inside that bubble, but you know, for Illinois games, it was the loge seating there behind the tunnel basket. But Minnesota was, they left the media up top row, far corner of the barn. So it was this very bizarre, there's no one anywhere in the arena, and then 20 people sitting as far as you can get from the court covering the game. And it was kind of bizarre because it's like, you could give each of us a section in the stadium and everybody would be fine and we could see this game. So it was just kind of weird, like, hey, you're going to sit as far as you possibly can from the court. But because of that, there was less noise from the court. You know, there was no real noise. You know, gyms in the 2021 season were just, you'd hear squeaking sneakers. But for that game, you're so far from the court, you don't even get the benches cheering. This, like, the noise was just different, and I could hear the Minnesota media react, and their reactions to what we did to them in the second half was what convinced me that we were at least going to the Final Four. That was like early February, I think, or maybe late March.
I tell you when it was. It was February 20th.
Okay. I was following the
game on the phone as I was driving to Florida.
Okay. Right?
So I remember that.
Yes. And when they looked like that in the second half and Io threw that oop to Georgie, and as I said, I think it was the under 12 timeout, I've never seen a basketball team as dejected as Minnesota walking to that timeout. Like, coach, can we just call the game? Like, this is, we can't stop them. They're too good. I give up. that was this moment of like, wow, we're not just good. We could win a national title good. And that's the moment I will forever remember from 2021. For 2020, I mean, it feels like a cop-out to say that the Kofi block on Garza in the Iowa game. So I won't. I think I'll go... maybe Io Indiana, which is the long three that doesn't get talked about enough. We would have lost that game. Well, we only won that game by one, right?
Yeah. They made a long buzzer beating three. We were up four, and they made a long three at the end. So I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
How it plays out.
So after the after the Wisconsin shot, after the Michigan shot, neither which I saw live, by the way, after those two shots and all the other things. There was just something about that Indiana shot that was like, can he do this forever? Like, I didn't think there was any chance that shot was going in. And so, wait, was it even a three? Did he hit a long two?
It was a three.
Okay. But it was like a minute 10 left or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was, Indiana was cutting in. Are we really gonna lose this? We need to win this to still stay alive to win a title.
Right.
Before going to Ohio State, and then he hit that. And so that's what I remember is like, oh, man, this guy's Superman. Like, you know, he wasn't 2021 Io yet, so we didn't really know. He wasn't, you know, a preseason first team All-Big Ten or anything else. He was still getting there at that time. And that Indiana game was this, like, yeah, I think he can save us all the time kind of game. So I'm gonna choose that for 2020. 2021, I choose
Minnesota. Yep.
Yeah, and so now I got to choose 2022 single
for this moment.
Let's see. The candidates are Trent Heater, Arizona. It's got to be Kofi, Wisconsin. It has to be. Yeah, has to be Kofi, Wisconsin. He was so, what was it, 37?
7 and 10, 37 yeah. and 12, I think.
Yeah, 37 and 12.
I mean, he just ruined those guys.
Yes.
That Stephen Crowell, he just ruined him.
Yes. It has to be that. Because that was just this, you know, is Wisconsin really a contender in the Big Ten? And we didn't know. And they're coming to Champaign, and I want the streak to continue. And that was if this game keeps going, if we don't take him out, he could get to 50 kind of a game. He couldn't miss, and they had 0.0 answers. So there's my three spots. I'm going Indiana 2020. I'm going Minnesota 2021, and I'm going Wisconsin 2022. Have we done this for you? Are you gonna participate? I'm on the couch
for you, and we didn't. Fortunately, you didn't steal any of mine. We'd have gone back and forth.
Right.
Didn't pick any of mine. Right. So I'll go in chronological order. My 2020 season was the IO shot at Wisconsin. You know, to me that kickstarted. That moment was when this whole run started. We had struggled the entire year. Leading up to that point.
The previous road game, we lost by 25.
Michigan State. We had a good game against Purdue. But that game, we hadn't won Wisconsin in a decade. And it was against Brad Davis, and he gives a little nudge, shoves him out of the way. And that kickstarted this whole era, the three-year era. So that's my 2020 pick. 2021 is easy for me. And I can relive this play just like the Iowa play. I can relive the moment forever. Is Trent's ankle breaking three against Michigan, where he just discarded Chandy Brown and.
Yep. And just, the sideline went crazy and Coleman Hawkins climbing on somebody's back.
And Connor Servan holding each other back.
Yep.
And Trent does a crossover between the legs, discards Brown, nails the three. He's walking back and just tore the heart out of Michigan in a game that we were supposed to lose by 15 without Iowa.
And can I note that 20. One Michigan media member turned to another after that and gave the, what is happening?
Like, do you really?
I just complete disbelief. Yes.
And I have a Kofi moment too. It was a game that I was covering, so I didn't get to experience the TV response. It just kind of even made it even more awesome. And it is after the fact is against Maryland. Io's there for his jersey celebration. He brings DeMar DeRozan with him, and they're sitting on courtside. And Kofi gets a rebound late in the second half and absolutely tomahawks a left-handed dunk out of nowhere. Like, he just brings it, and just, like, you know, Kofi can dunk like crazy. We know this. Mm-hmm. But it was just out of nowhere. He just threw down this vicious left-handed dunk against one of the Maryland bigs. And he turned, and I watched him, and he turned and looked right at Io and DeMar DeRozan and just had this biggest grin and roar on his face and his backpedaling down the court, pointing at those guys. It was, you know, as Underwood would say, it's never a bad day. Kofi,
yeah,
never a bad day for Kofi. Never has a bad day.
Yep.
And just to watch his joy and that moment and that to me is the full Kofi experience that we've enjoyed these last three seasons. And that's my most memorable moment from this season, from that standpoint. So
okay, I pick your team over mine.
And then after so I get home and I'm watching highlights of the game, and I don't know if you ever saw this highlight, but that the highlight of that moment, the color guy, I don't know if it was Fox, FS1, if it was ESPN or BTN or whatever, but the play-by-play guy doesn't even get a chance because the color guy goes, "Oh my God!" Just that was the response, just in the moment, and that's exactly what my response on press row was in my mind,
yep.
And that's exactly the visceral response that color guy from doing the game had in the moment, and so that's. That was the Kofi moment from this year. So those are my three indelible memories from the last three seasons.
Okay, so we probably have to switch to talking about, like, the future, right? Like,
yep.
We can't do this without talking about this offseason and what comes next. So I guess the first question, or the big question, is is there some way they could get Kofi to stay? So let's, you know, or maybe we shouldn't even base it on that. Like, seems like such a crazy dream.
It does. And I don't know what Kofi's mindset is and what degree that the NIL and these Illini Guardians, can manage this. But if nothing else, we'll have more clarity early on. I believe that, and I could be completely wrong, so if I am, then please call me out. But I think that because he's declared for the draft before, I think he has to, we'll know by mid-April or end of April if he's in or out this year. It won't drag on into June or July. So yeah. I think we'll get an earlier answer. But I in my brain, I'm not sure I can envision a future and really have a discussion in the future that involves Kofi. I mean, obviously, if Kofi comes back, we're not 17-14. We're again at the top of the conference, top three or four in the conference. We're a solid NCAA tournament team, and depending on who comes back from this year and how the freshmen develop, that will determine if we're good or really good.
Yeah.
So I think if we're talking about the future, we have to just assume that Kofi's not coming back, because we know that if Kofi returns, we're still going to be a really good team.
Yes.
So.
Yes. So without Kofi and without Trent, without Plummer, without DeMonte, let's just go ahead and say we get Jake back. He has a COVID bonus year he can use. So let's just say we have Grandison returning. And so as of now, obviously there's transfer portal and that changes things. You add Dane Danger, you add the three freshmen in Epps, Harris, and Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
You have the three freshmen returning, You have, you know, three sophomores in Melendez, Goody, and Pajemski. And then you have
Coleman,
Curbelo and Coleman. Yes. And there's
the likelihood of all those things happening and that roster being, as you mentioned, it is about 17%.
Yes.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's,
yes.
If this transfer portal evolution has led me to the thought processes that, unless I hear otherwise, I assume that anyone is a transfer risk.
Yes.
Simple as that.
I mean, to the point where I saw some report, I forget who it was. There was some report on somebody who entered the portal, maybe the kid from Mizzou, not Pickett, the other kid.
Trevor Brazil.
Where someone wrote that it's not necessarily transferring. He just wanted to get NIL proposals.
What? You know,
I think we kind of maybe have to look at it like that. You know, in a sense that, like, people are afraid to hear the news that, you know, that they're going to just wake up and see a tweet that says so-and-so has entered the transfer portal. But I feel like we are quickly approaching the time where most players will enter the portal just to see what's out there. Like,
right.
You know, a kid who has a four-year scholarship somewhere and hasn't played in the first 2 years and is probably more likely a transfer than he is a comeback, then yes, if they enter the transfer portal, the coaches will just be like, okay, that voids your four-year scholarship, son. Good luck to you. Even if you said you wanted to come back, you're not out. But any college player who a team desperately wants for the next season, I feel like most of them will just enter the portal to see what else is out there and then make their decision.
I have a different take on that. Obviously, there's hundreds of people in this portal, but and part of this is I'll admit, is based on an article. I don't know if you read it or not, from The Athletic, that talked about the transfer portal. It was one of those articles where they get a bunch of anonymous quotes from coaches and say, well, you know, what do you think about the transfer portal, all this kind of stuff. And what stood out to me is, like, if a high profile major Power 5 conference person enters the portal, that's already a done deal somewhere. That's being done because behind the scenes, that person knows where they're going. They have a landing spot already in mind. The mid-major guys, you know, that's kind of open season. It's like a whole recruiting season where all these guys who are putting up 15 and 10 in the MAC or in the Southland Conference or whatever, those guys go in and that's kind of open season re-recruiting. And then you have another tier of low major guys who are just trying to transfer to other low major sites. They're just trying to see what's out there. So I do think that a lot of the high profile transfers, it's just that's already kind of behind the scenes taken care of. So
if there is, let's just say, just for the, like you said, 17% chance that everybody I mentioned comes back. Yep. Say that 17% chance hits. There's then going to be a few portal additions. I think there's two spots.
Well, if everyone comes back, then there wouldn't be, because I think we're minus two in scholarships right now, technically. If everyone you mentioned
with
comes
Lieb
back.
With and BBV?
Yeah, I mean, that would be, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that would be your options, but.
Okay. Well, then let's just put it like this. Say you add two portal additions to team.
I'll go with that. Yeah.
What do you want? Like, what do you think are the needs? We're going to say Kofi is gone. We just
It's such a if then. If Bello comes back, then my answer is different. If Bello doesn't come back, then we need a ball handler. We do. If Bello comes back and Coleman Hawkins transfers, then we need a four somewhere.
So what you're saying is we are unable to do this exercise.
It's a really difficult exercise.
You're right. Yes. Okay, so let's say that it's lower end of the roster is cleared out, but you do have Bello, Hawkins, two of the three freshmen. We won't guess who might leave or something like that, and then say somebody else, another bench big leaves or whatever.
Then,
so
then we need guards. But yes, there's also that Sky Clark thing that's hanging out there that seems to be a definite possibility that this kid who decommitted from Kentucky could be a spring signee. He's coming off an ACL injury, so you know there's a little bit of question mark there, but that's a potential guard option to add in.
Yeah.
So
I mean, do you think we go young like that? Like, do you think this is that you're going to get most of your guard play? You know, most of your replacement for your Plummer, Trent, and DeMonte would come from Epps, Harris, and anybody else?
I think guards, yes. I think that the transfer portal options would be in some sort of size, you know, in that power forward, you know, vein, you know, someone to add some size and athlete, you know, that's again, we're talking about it. Does Underwood want to increase his athleticism and bring in more guys who can interchange and defend several positions on the floor and create havoc and that kind of thing. So,
yeah. And I mean, we did this whole thing. I even mentioned Payne once. So, you know, that's another factor in all of this.
I'm not going to factor Omar Payne into the rotation, whether he's here or not. I just didn't see enough from him to think that he's got the chops to play at this level.
It's so funny that if you remember, I left Press Row in Nebraska and went to the one section of the stadium for the final 4 minutes in Nebraska when Omar Payne dominated. And there's an entire section of Nebraska fans who believe Omar Payne to be probably the best Big Ten player in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
God bless him for having those 4 minutes. Yes.
I mean, he put up good numbers in Florida. So, I mean, there's something there. But for whatever reason, it's just, and you know, it's tough. To be fair, it's tough to perform in 3 minute stretches, which is all he was going to get with when Kofi was on the floor. It's just, you know, I remember in the preseason, Underwood was like, you know, we've got Omar. We're doing a lot with Omar and Kofi on this running the floor at the same time. And everyone's like, okay, yeah, but let's be real here. That's not going to be the case. I mean, I feel bad for the kid because I'm sure he signed on with the idea that Kofi was not going to be here, and you know, so. Once he came back, that was one strike, and then two strikes. He's a ball screen kind of guy. If anyone was going to benefit from Andre Curbelo being on the floor, it was Omar Payne. And then Bello sits out for 2/3 of the season, and it's just it just wasn't going to happen for him. So maybe that's an option of someone who's not here next year. But again, it's impossible for me to speculate because it's just who knows.
And honestly, August is when we can start to speculate.
Right.
Like we got Kofi back mid-July. You know, there's just so many things that can happen between now and August. You know, you can have somebody say they're staying and then they enter the portal in June. Like, there's, you know, nothing is assured until we look at who's enrolling in August and say, okay, there's the basketball team.
So, But I still go back to what I said earlier, is that I do think the Big Ten on the whole, again, the transfer portal changes and who knows who will come and go to other schools, but the Big Ten looks to have a rebuild kind of year because they're going to lose, you know, certainly the first team all Big Ten team is not, I mean, again, unless Kofi comes back or whatever.
Right.
But I think that the conference looks to be wide open next year. Michigan should be good depending on what they do. They have a good recruiting class coming in. But other than that, I just don't see where the talent is in this conference. So I think there's an opportunity depending on what our roster looks like. But again, it's just so hard to project.
All right. One more thing with next year, and you have 2 seconds to answer this question.
Yep.
We're assuming Kofi is gone as we did with all the other things.
Yep.
Leading scorer next year.
RJ Melendez.
Woo! You just brought me from a level 10 to a level 8 on depression just by saying that.
I think he's prime. Again, I think he's not, I don't, I'm not going to go overboard do the Keegan Murray, Johnny Davis thing, but
yes,
he is, you know, you talk about a sophomore leap. If there's anyone who is prime for a sophomore leap, it's RJ Melendez.
Well, I thank you, sir. I want to almost end there. We won't, but like that's a jolt to the. I needed some orange and blue juice right straight to the vein, and that was that. Is the game over yet? I don't have a clock in front of me.
The Houston Arizona game?
Yes.
It's 5 minutes left. Do you want to know a score?
Oh, God. Hold on. I mean, I always. You know what? Since we're talking, yes, I do want to know the score.
There's 5 minutes left.
Yes.
Houston 61, Arizona 50.
Oh, come on. Wait, do I want that? Crap, I forgot if I want that or not. No, I kind of want it.
I mean, oh, again, watching Houston now, it validates all my fears about them. And they are, you know, their Ken Pom ranking, you know, was suspect because, oh, well, they didn't play anybody. But this team is playing to their Ken Pom rank. And again, there's still 5 minutes left. Anything could happen. But Arizona has had immense difficulties scoring against this Houston defense. They got 50 points. It's one of the best offenses in the country. I get 50 points with 5 minutes left in the game. There's no shame in this Houston team. It goes back to, you know, there's no karma in this world if Kelvin Sampson can do this. But this is a really good basketball team that I'm watching right now.
I hate everything. There's nothing I like about anything. I hate everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think I want that to happen. I don't know. I want the reality to set it. I don't know what I want. I don't think I want that to happen.
I don't know. Everyone's going to have their own thoughts. I think you always want the team that beat you to have.
To go deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm just so tired of that 4-5 game. Okay. RJ brought me from a 10 to an 8. Almost got to a 7. Back. I went back to a 9. I'll say it. I've been sitting here trying to, like, I don't want to say that out loud. I'm not going to say that out loud. I'll say it out loud. I really don't. I try to often bring some measured reality to Illini Twitter when these crazy yapping contests with other fan bases go nuts. We get so far into yapping about our team that we start making our team something it wasn't or isn't. And I want to bring balance to those moments because part of fandom is being very, very realistic about your team. Because of that, if Houston goes to like the title game, people will take, you know, it's going to hurt for me to see people say, oh, well, it was the stupid draw. Like, it wasn't even a disappointing NCAA tournament. Like, it was the draw both years. Loyola and Houston were just really good, and it was just the draw. And, you know, I can't live in that. I have to live in the space of, you know what, it was tremendously disappointing. And we didn't get to the second weekend during this run, and it's really disappointing. And when people try to cover that up with, oh, no, it was this. Oh, there's this reason. I want the reality to be, look, I don't want to grieve something that wasn't. I'm just going to grieve something that happened. And what happened is we lost on Sunday two straight years.
We did. But, again, and this is something I was going to bring up earlier, and it slipped my mind or whatever. But in my brain, we overachieved all year relative to everything that happened. When I was extremely bullish on this team back in October. I thought this was a top 10 level team based on two factors. One, I thought Andre Curbelo was going to be amazing this year. I was so high on his potential to build on what he did as a freshman. And obviously that never happened. Two, I thought we were going to be a better shooting team than we ended up. And whether it was injury or whatever, or defenses caught on to what we were doing, the shooting that was part of that never really it kind of fell off. But we still, despite all those issues, won a Big Ten title. I'm going to hang a banner. ended up as a number four seed in the tournament. And so I can't in my brain feel disappointed. In the moment, yes, but I can't feel disappointed in my mind if my brain is telling me that we overachieved all season.
You know, what's crazy is that I, you know, you do the preview section of the, you predict the record when we do the, yep, the thing. It's crazy that you nailed it, and we did that without the Curbelo, right, you were basing that prediction on.
100%.
Yeah. That you,
I was basing it on 55% Damonte Williams shooting. I was basing it on yeah, Kofi being not injured in the year, on
yep,
Trent Frazier being beat up all season, on Jake missing, you know, the last game, and yep, the 10-state tournament. So again, that's I had all these hedges built in, and that's why after I got over Sunday that my brain is really kind of turning. I keep looking back at this season, these last 3 years, as with a happy smile on my face.
Yeah, I just need a, well, my entire life I've needed what I thought was happening in 13, that a 7 seed could get to the Elite Eight, you know, like I need that Illini team. I need what Michigan just did. You know, we have all this, you know, it was Leach who said it on the podcast. Like, the Illinois basketball experience is when we have a 1 seed, we make a deep run. Did an 89, did an 01, we got to the Elite Eight, 05. You know, like, didn't happen in 21, but, like, the good teams, the deep runs are the ones who got the 1 seed. If we're a 4 or a 5, we make it as far as a 4 or a 5 should go, and that's just who we are as Illinois basketball. You know, that we don't have that 5 seed Florida. We don't have that 10 seed Providence. We don't have that 8 seed Wisconsin that made the Final Four in 2000 or whatever. We just have never had that team.
It defies math.
Yes.
I mean, yes, there's no, I mean, what are we, 2 for our last 17 on Sweet 16 appearances based, yeah, on NCAA turn. I mean,
yep,
if you do our hit rate compared to other top 20 teams, obviously, you know, if you're a random team that makes the NCAA tournament, your hit rate's going to be low. But if, yeah, you look at major programs who've had 15 plus NCAA tournament appearances over the last 20 years, and look at what their Sweet 16 hit rate is compared to ours. We've had 2, yep, 2001, 2005.
Yep,
and it's there's no rhyme or reason to it because it's been 4 different coaches. Bill Self had disappointments. Remember Notre Dame and Danny Miller.
Wait, we have 3. 02. 02, we lost to, wait, yes,
we lost to Kansas to get to the Sweet 16.
Okay. No, we beat.
Wait.
02, we got to the Sweet 16.
Oh, we lost in the Sweet 16 to Kansas.
Kansas, yes.
Sorry, we beat Creighton. We beat San Diego State, maybe it was?
Yes, correct. The 13 seed won, so we get it. We beat a 12 and a 13 to get to the,
right,
Sweet,
okay,
16.
Sorry, yeah, so
yes,
my bad. So still 3.
Yes.
But you think about it. I mean, whether it was Bill Self, whether it was Bruce, yes, Weber, whether, yes, it was John Gross, whether it was Brad Underwood. It's just this weird happenstance that for whatever reason we find ourselves, you know, because it's, yeah, to be fair, it's hard. If you're a 1,
yeah,
you make this, it's obviously the path is there. 4 or 5, it's really hard to make the Sweet 16 because you're going to have to beat a 1 to, you know, you're going to have to beat an even team to get there.
Yep.
We never get that 3-6, you know, kind of opportunity to get there. And so it's just, yep, been bizarre and it, yep, defies logic. And, you know, I have to kind of put my metric cap on and think, well, sample size tells me that we're due for something crazy, even though it never happens. It's just,
yeah,
if you just keep taking bites of the apple, just keep putting yourself in the position, it's got to happen eventually.
It's funny that makes me think of a golf debate. So, I'll just say it. Like, I'm like, are you really going to talk about golf right now? Mm-hmm. It's the Tony Finau thing, okay? So Tony, yep, Finau has finished second in a bunch of tournaments. There's a website called Data Golf, and at this point, Tony Finau should have something like 5.3 PGA Tour titles, and he only has 2.
Based on his stroke average or whatever it is, right?
Based on where he's and him getting deep in a tournament. And so that's, you know, obviously with golf people, the debate is, well, is he just a choker? You know, like, is he just, oh, he's right there, but he couldn't do it again? Or is it, look, any other week, Tony Finau is 17 under, and that would have won that tournament. But this guy played the tournament of his life. He's 20 under. The rest of the field is way back here. Finau played good enough to win and would have won. It's just this freaky thing that some of these players are having fantastic weeks, and he finishes second. And that's just, it's just, you know, math at that point. You know, some will take the stance of, look, he's a choker, and look, he should have won this tournament, should have won this tournament, he didn't. Others will take the, look, if you just keep putting yourself there, then you keep putting yourself there, and you're going to, you know, you're going to eventually do that. So I have, over the years, drifted toward, yeah, it is kind of just math. It's not as much choking. And sure, if he has like a four-stroke lead with four holes to play and he puts three in the water, that's a choke. But he'll shoot a 66 on a Sunday and just not
win.
Still
lose.
Yes, and still lose. And it's just math at that point of, look, you know, you played outstanding. It just happened to be that was that guy's best week in 5 years, where he made every putt and lipped in six putts on the final day, and he just beat you. And so, yes, I do tend to think we at some point we have to. Now, I see your face here. We're doing this. Is this a close game? Because now my brain is like, oh, God, should I turn this on? No, I'm not going to turn this on.
It's not a close game.
Okay.
My face was, I wanted to say, you know, if use your funny Tony Finau example, you know, that's one player over a long stretch of time. If we had the same coach over a long period of time, then maybe you could say maybe this guy just doesn't figure out how to do an NCAA tournament plan. But again, this is four coaches that we're talking about. Five if you go back to Lou, so or six if you go back to Lou and Lon.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's why I think that, you know, obviously you just keep putting yourself in position. It's going to happen. And I can't think otherwise. I mean, I don't have this fatality. Like I wrote about this in one of the articles that I posted for the site is I don't buy into the fact, well, just because you were lousy, you had a bad tournament last year means that you're doomed to have a bad tournament this year. And so I can't, by the same stretch, I can't say just because we had a stretch of non-16 tweets doesn't have any bearing on next year. Every year is its own thing, and so we just have to keep plugging away, and the program's recruiting well, and you keep putting players out there, and I'm happy with where we're at.
Okay,
big picture.
Tell me this: is it over yet, or are
it's
we still
pretty much over? It's Arizona's Houston's up 9 with a minute left.
Okay, you know, 9 with a minute left is my Missouri 1993 line, right?
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that.
Yes, but that is my exact it's still not over line in the
mine is still the 14 with 3 minutes left on the Arizona game. And
the thing that people forget about the 93 Missouri game, the famous three overtime bragging rights game, everybody remembers Kiwan's free throws, whatever. The thing people forget is Illinois led by 9 with a minute to go. And Missouri went 5 for 5 from three. We were hitting our free throws, like hit one or two, and then we hit both. They went 5 for 5 from three in the final minute and tied it and sent it to overtime. So that is my consistent forever. 9 with a minute to go isn't over. 10, it's over. 9, it's not. I don't know what that has
ten,
to do with
it. 10's 4 possessions, 9's 3 possessions. Yeah,
yes.
I get you.
Yes. I don't rest until it is. Okay, so... so now we can talk that we lost to a team that's so it's Houston Nova. Houston.
They'll play Nova, yeah.
They can
beat. Yeah, talk about that. That game might be in the 40s. Talk about two teams. That's probably the two slowest tempo teams in the tournament.
Yeah, Nova was hilarious to watch them warm up. They are a football team playing basketball. Like they have some dudes that I want at tight end, like massive dudes. Like, they are huge. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. We probably should wrap this up.
Okay. Yeah, well.
So,
It's going to be like the podcast we did back after the Rutgers game. We watched Purdue and Iowa for like 20 minutes. Right. We were just like watching it.
Right. Maybe we should open up some Uncrustables. Okay. So I'm going to let you have the final word because I'm too just angry and mad and depressed and just an idiot. So you get the final word on this season. So 2022 Illinois basketball, your final thoughts.
We overachieved, not based on preseason expectations, but because of all the injuries that we dealt with. We finished 15-5 in the Big Ten. We're going to hang a banner. You were there to see that, which should bring you immense joy. I know you loved that night.
I do, especially since it was Iowa.
For the second year in a row, we ran up against a really bad draw in the tournament. That Houston team, if we play them 10 times, I think we probably lose 7 times. I just think, again, like I said at the beginning, everything they do well matches up against how we played the game this year. And so my final take on this 2021/2022 season is an immense success that validates what Trent, DeMonte, Kofi, and even Io, even though he's not part of this banner, brought to this fan base over the last 3 years. And that's why I will look back on this season with, especially next year when they roll that banner down, with great happiness and fond memories. That the NCAA tournament loss is not going to factor with me all that much, because from a basketball standpoint, we lost to a better team.
Well stated. I thank you for having some perspective where I cannot. And I have but one final question for you.
Yep.
Please tell me Duke lost so that K is done.
Duke did win. Texas Tech led most of that game, and Duke made a final push, and they won 78-73.
I hate the way I fan. I just do. Like, I need so many losses.
The Houston Arizona game's final, 72-60. So Arizona did break 50, or hit the 60 mark, but not by much.
I just hate. I have put myself in an impossible. I will never be happy. This is it. That's what I've
Houston's going to the Final Four. If the Villanova team that I watched play Michigan tonight shows up, yeah, Houston will choke them to death.
And that means a happy Kelvin Sampson.
I know, right? That's the worst part of it. Not again. I get the part of losing to a better basketball team, but again, Kelvin Sampson wins. That's the takeaway.
Yes.
It's not the Greg Waddell's of the world. So screw the Greg Waddell's of the world.
Right.
It's the Kelvin Sampsons, the Bruce Pearls. They shouldn't get to win.
Cheating. Listen, kids in high school, if you're listening to me, always cheat. You will win in life, and then the good people like Illinois will lose. So be a cheater. You heard it here from Uncle Robert. Be a cheater, because cheating pays off, because cheaters get to go to the Final Four. And honest, hardworking fans and a fan base like Illinois has to deal with depression. Yep. What a great moment to end on. All right, man.
As I'm watching Kelvin Sampson at center court pumping his fist.
Oh God, I'm so glad.
I'm not letting you leave with that. I want you to visualize it for you.
I close my eyes.
Visualize that picture I sent to you of Trent running down the floor with the ball in his hands.
Okay.
After the
Chris
Murray missed that three, and we have a Big Ten championship.
Yes, and
that's the visual I want you to leave with.
Right, and I don't even need that picture, because I think I even said after the game that specific moment, Trent, I think it was left hand in the air with a finger pointing to the sky, running with that ball, is as excited as you know, it is burned into my memory as this, like, finally, after 17 years, that streak of not winning the Big Ten is over. We can put another number up there and then worry about getting the next one. So,
yep.
All right, I will focus on that. I appreciate it. This was more helpful for me than the listeners, probably. So I thank you for talking me out of my doldrums. I just got a text from my son, who hasn't texted me since like our text right after the game. So he's probably checking in to see if I'm okay. And I will be able to report that you moved me from a 10 on the depression scale. I'm going to say that I got to an 8. Almost go made RJ. It to 7, but then...
It was all RJ.
I slid back down to 8. All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime.
All right, go along.
ILL.